listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
If you've listened to this show for any length of time, you've heard me say that we're all busy creating our own lives, that we manifest. You've also heard that more and more people are suggesting that instead of working so hard, we manifest directly and consciously creating the lives we want to lead. But what do you know about doing that? How practical is this activity for everyday life, and what are some of the tricks for doing it? We're talking today with David Ibrahim about a practical approach to conscious creation. Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that's dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm your host, Eileen Dillon, and during this broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chat. We have two, one at blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living, or we have emotionalpro.com on the radio page. We also have a toll-free number, 800-630-7858, so you can overcome your personal shyness and create what you want by talking with me or our guest. Now, David Ibrahim is a yoga and meditation teacher and also a conscious creation life coach who was born and raised in Elmhurst, Queens, New York. He's gone from his inner-city urban upbringing to being a restaurateur to being a top-performing vice president manager at one of the largest banks in the world to being a loving dad and gentle, encouraging yogi. He combines an array of yoga principles, conscious creation tools, spiritual philosophies, and inner child championing, which allows him to weave a mystical fabric of self-awareness and self-transformation to his work. His teaching style is a unique blend of life, love, poetry, and ancient and modern approaches to self-actualization, benefiting everyone. He's a registered yoga teacher. He's also a member of the International Association of Yoga Therapists. So, David Ibrahim, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. Thanks for having me on the show. It's very generous, and I appreciate it. And thanks for the introduction.
Mm-hmm. Boy, if you look at your picture on the internet, you don't look old enough to have done half that stuff. So I hope continues for your whole life.
I'll be lucky. I think the soul is much more ancient than the body, and we can have a lot of existence and awareness and knowledge and experience in a lifetime, no matter what our age is. So sometimes we even look at children and we're like, oh, they're only children. When children can actually be our greatest teachers, you know, they can show us how to live life freely again and how to live life with an open heart and to be playful and to find our joy again. Children are probably more wise than us as we get older, in a sense, and we have to always cultivate that inner child within us to keep it alive, because life will shut it down. So I think you bring up a good point. What is age, and how do we look at it as a modern society, and the truth behind it, or
how
does it serve us?
Yeah, today is my granddaughter's birthday. It's also my wedding anniversary. For some reason, she usurped my wedding anniversary, but by being born.
How old is your granddaughter?
She's turning 7, and next month, as she pointed out to me this morning, I'm turning 70, and she's very enamored of that. And I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking she recently had some difficulties at school, and I got involved in it. My son asked me to come and observe what the heck was happening because she just went on strike and wouldn't do anything. And my observation was that there was a lot of very subtle controlling going on that she just wouldn't tolerate. But this morning, now she's going to be moved to a new school that she's gone to visit. This morning she announced to me, this is a child just turning 7, that the problem with the school she's been attending is that they don't teach in a way that's right for her. And I thought, how wise is that?
That's amazing. It's great that you're able to listen to that, too. Some parents or grandparents might shut that down. instead of honoring her own talent or awareness, and to say, well, where can we go as a team? You know, I think that's the modern process also, is having a discipline as a parent, but also being open to the wisdom of the child, and seeing who are they uniquely, not who I want them to be or who I want to mold them to be based on my own fearful conditioning or my own survival-based conditioning, but more about who are they as connected to life source, maybe even more connected than I am as an adult, yeah.
I agree with you on that. And actually, I have a website called Raise Incredible Kids, where I'm promoting an approach for parenting that does exactly that. I raised my own children, who are now 42, 35, and 25, using a method I have called conscious parenting for many years. So I totally agree with you on that. And it's such a wonderful tool. And when we're talking about creating our lives, that's one of the interesting things that happened with my granddaughter. I was talking with my son the other day, and he said, Mom, she's the most amazing manifester. She had a problem in school. She manifested her grandmother to come and visit the school, take her away for 3 or 4 days, give her a break. Then they had a neighbor, it turned out, who's a very high-level teacher in a charter school, who came over for dinner and checked out how she was functioning, went to the new school, and the new school is going into overdrive to get her into the school, you know, speeding up all their processes. And my son is convinced that his daughter is creating that. So when we're talking about creating, what are we talking about from your point of view? How can you relate to that from what you talk about?
Yes, thank you, Eileen. And I think that we're creating our reality in the sense of the same way an artist is creating a painting. We have choice. We have brush strokes. We have colors to pick from. We have styles of utensils, of brushes to choose from, small ones, thick ones. In the same way in our life, we show up on a daily basis with our belief systems, our actions, our reactions, our responses. So I see that if we're conditioned a certain way, and let's say we're a Jackson Pollock-style painting, we might never find that wild painter within us if we've been conditioned to be conservative when we're not in our spirit, let's say. Our natural, authentic self might be more creative and loose. And then we end up making choices and shutting our natural energy down. And then we don't find happiness in life because we don't even know who we are. There's a beautiful quote from Hillel the Elder. He says, if not me for me, who for me? And if me for me, which me am I? And if not now, when? So there's that beautiful idea of which me am I? You know, we have these sub-personalities. So which personality am I? Who's conditioned them? Who's created those personalities? And how much has it to do with my authentic self? And where do I find my own potency as a human being, as a creative being? We are conscious creators in the sense that the great creator is within us also. The great artist is within us too. We have limitation. You know, we're confined to a physical body, but we are confined in the sense the same way an artist is confined to their canvas. We can still paint life on a daily basis and a beautiful, gorgeous array of choices. We have choices. And I think that's what makes us a conscious creator, is the ability to choose our reality and how to choose even our thinking, and not to go about our conditioned fate, but to transform that through choices, to say, oh, no, I don't feel good doing this. This job doesn't make me happy. How do I slowly transition and explore? You dare to explore different areas. I've owned a restaurant. I've worked in a bank. I've done a lot of different kinds of jobs in my life because I'm constantly exploring, and now I feel like I'm exploring yoga, and I love it. I've been doing yoga for a long time, but I feel like it's definitely my calling, and maybe that will change too one day. Maybe I'm a fluctuating soul, and I like to just allow myself to add on to the being and grow in wonder and joy, like a child, in a sense, to find that freedom within myself, you know? And that might get complicated for people, yeah? But there's also simplicity. Yeah, please.
Well, you know, that's interesting, the parenting consciously that I'm talking about. That was one of the things about 45 years ago when I had my first child. I thought, what is it that I need to convey to my child, because I was aware that the kind of parenting that was done with me was teaching me when you by specific cases. And when you get in this situation, this is how you behave. And when you get in that situation, that's how you behave. And I realized that the way the world was going, my children were likely to get into situations that I couldn't even imagine. And so what did I need to give them so that they would know what they wanted to do when they got to a situation that they hadn't encountered before? And my decision was that they needed to know how to make choices, and they needed to focus those choices inward on themselves. But now, in your work, you say that creating reality is both simple and complex, and I'm curious what you mean by that.
Yes, in the sense that, complex in the sense that I have choices. Am I aware of what choices am I making? A lot of times we don't have awareness. Svadhyaya, we call it in yoga, self-knowledge. We don't have self-knowledge to understand that we're making choices based on past conditioning that has nothing to do with us as individuals. So maybe it comes from religion, religious influence. Maybe it comes from family fear, family influence, survival-based ideas. And so we are, or society. Society says, this is the way life is. Go ahead and join the, jump on the boat. But we might feel like, no, that's not the island I want to go to. No, I don't like that weather there. I don't like the food there. And you get to explore and say, well, what do I like to do? And that can get complicated for people when they're transitioning from being conditioned to reconditioning themselves. How do we recondition ourselves? I think is a powerful question that people can ask and meditate on in a way to say, we're meditating every day and we're using visualizations every day. But usually we've been conditioned to do that, so it's survival-based. They're usually negative, like we're projecting into a future. We're using the same tools that I'm going to be sharing today, but in a negative way. And that's where it can get complex, is a lot of times we're not aware of that, and slowly people are waking up to understanding that they are consciously creating their life through choice, that they have choices, and that they're not aware of that they're making choices based on old conditioning. So then how do you reverse that? How do you change the tape in a sense and transform your perception? How do we transform our perception in life? And what is our perception based upon? I think those are two powerful questions to understand as an individual and to ask ourselves, like, where did this perception come from? Where did this idea come from? Why am I working a job I'm not happy with? Or why am I in a marriage or a relationship that I'm not happy with? Who am I? What's cooking inside of me? How do I let go of that and dare to explore life and not become homeless? Because usually that's the baseline fear that everybody has. I'll be homeless or I'll die. It's all the survival fears. So I think that's the complex part, is how to find out what's like religious dogma. What kind of religions are we being influenced by in a negative way? And what kind of ideas have challenged us in a negative way? Because everything has its positive and negative. So I think taking time for, as an individual, to say, where am I today with myself, and who am I? What's going on in my own mind, my own perception? Why am I taking these actions? And that could be complicated. That's where the transitioning comes into place. And I think this is the age of transitioning.
Yes, I agree with
you. Right? It's like the end of the world, you hear people saying. I think it's the end of an old world. Like, we're transitioning from an old world to a new world. So this idea that we are consciously creating our reality and that we have choices. Virginia Satir, the amazing therapist, said our choices and our coping skills determine our reality.
Yes.
So what kind of coping skills and choices am I having today? How have I been conditioned? And how can I recondition them? And I'm promoting my hypnosis, conscious creation, hypnosis CD, to help reprogram the mind on a daily basis. How do I show up every day?
I've put that URL for your CD on the two chats also. David, you bring up Virginia Satir. I had the wonderful joy of meeting her in person many years ago, and what an incredible woman she was. I learned from her. She was at a small gathering. One of her students was Colonel Al Kilby, who was in charge of the social work department at the hospital at the Presidio, Letterman Hospital in San Francisco, and they were holding a small reception for her. My husband happened to work in that department, and she came to the party, and she was quite generous with herself, but when she went to leave, she walked around to every person in the party, looked into their eyes, took them by the hand, and made a personal statement to them, so that by the time she left the room, all the energy had risen. You know, she just lifted the whole room, and that's really really wonderful. You know, this idea, I just want to tell you briefly, a lot of people listening have heard this before. When my son was fairly young, he had a little bird that he was training to fly to his shoulder, and it was a little cockatiel, and he took it outside at dusk one night, and it flew away, and he was unable to find it. So he came to me with tears and said, "Please help me find my bird." And so we went across the street to a woodsy area, and he was crying, and he was repeating the words, "I've lost my bird, I've lost my bird." I think he was about 9 years old or 10. "I've lost my bird." And I stopped him. When you're talking about perceptions here, I stopped him and said, "Wait a minute. Have you lost your bird, or is it just temporarily missing and it's coming back to you? Because if you've lost your bird, we're wasting our time. There's no reason to be out here." And he stopped, and he said, "No, it's coming back." And I said, "Well, then that's what I need to hear you say. I need you to say, I've lost, you know, my bird is gone, and it's coming back to me." The words that I used was, "It's my bird, and it's coming back to me." And the long and the short of it is, not only did he get that bird back, but somebody gave him two more.
And that's the power of perception to shift our reality. You know, I think that's a good story that you bring up. It's the power of perception. A lot of times, if we let our mind go into this kind of negative rabbit hole, you know, negative funnel, we'll slip, and people get depressed. Even recently, I heard somebody saying how they started doing, they didn't even realize that they were meditating on negative ideas for weeks and putting themselves down and really damaging themselves emotionally and going through a depression of, which started in their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shifted. They started doing yoga and meditating, and they started on a daily basis shifting the visualizations and having positive visualizations and putting healthy energy back out into the universe. And their whole reality changed within literally days. The funny thing is, you don't even have to go for long to do this work. It can happen immediately when your energy starts releasing. You know, it's like a painter or a writer that approaches the blank canvas and they're frustrated and their mind is not in a creative state. They're not able to produce a beautiful work of art. But when we get relaxed and we let go and we allow ourselves to trust, and we open up that healthy communication with source energy within us or with people around us that are healthy, all of a sudden our whole reality shifts. And I think that's the simplicity part of changing our reality, that we are consciously changing our reality.
Mm-hmm.
We can choose our thoughts even, you know, and our
mm-hmm.
behaviors. And I want to share a story. There's a quote.
I want you to share this story, David, but we're at a break time. So let me take a break first. And when we come back, I want you to share that story, and I want to talk to you more about habits as well. Okay?
Awesome. I look forward to it.
Thank you. We're talking today with yoga and meditation teacher and conscious creation life coach David Ibrahim about a practical approach to conscious manifestation. We'll be right back. You're listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Remember that our upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on EmotionalPro.com. And in our next show, I'm talking with Paul Hulich, a man who was under so much stress that he cracked and was diagnosed by 11 psychiatrists as having bipolar disorder. So he went to both the Mayo and the Menninger clinics, and when he was there, he studied what was going on with him and the other mental patients and decided to take a different path. So he's now medication-free and has been for the last 12 years, and he's going about the world talking about the 9 natural steps to wellness that he created and followed that he hopes will work for you or someone you love in cracking what he calls the stress pandemic. It's a wonderful follow-up to last week's show that we had with psychiatrist Dr. Peter Bregan about psychiatric medication. And if you haven't heard that show, be sure to listen to the archives. And we do have archives on Emotional Pro and on Blog Talk Radio, and you can also subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. Now, today we're talking with yoga and meditation teacher and conscious creation life coach David Ibrahim. And David, I stopped you from telling us a story. I'm anxious to hear it, so please go forward.
Oh, thank you, Eileen. And that sounds like a good show. I'm going to tune in for that one. I'm very curious to see what was his experience and what did he learn while being in the institute.
Great.
Or institution,
yes.
I should say. So there's this quote, the mind takes the shape of what it rests upon. And there's a beautiful story in yoga about the wishing tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it illustrates the fluctuating mind. And there was this yogi who ended up sitting under this powerful, magical tree that would manifest his thoughts. And when he was sitting down, he started visualizing and imagining to become wealthy. He wanted to be rich. And what happened was a bag of gold magically appeared in his hands. And he got all excited, and he realized that, oh, my God, I'm rich. This is amazing. Look at this. My life is going to change now. And he started having all these happy thoughts. So he went from wishful thinking to happy thinking, and he started having all these happy thoughts about what he would do with the money and what he would buy. He wasn't your typical yogi. And then, in a moment, he started thinking that he was alone in the forest and that it's dangerous to be alone in the forest, and there's robbers out and bandits. And within a split second, he was approached by thieves. They appeared magically. And they ended up robbing him and taking his money. And then he started crying. So he went from that fearful thought to a depressed thought. He started crying and saying, oh, my God, I was rich. They took my money. What am I going to do without money now? And so he ended up realizing it was better to just be in a state of content and peace. And then he ended up creating that for his own mind and allowing himself to be in a state of relaxation and peace. And that was his greatest wealth. So he left the tree. But I think the tree is a way of seeing the fluctuating mind and how we are creating our reality just through our perception. Where we put our mind will be. Yeah, and a lot of times as we are conditioned a certain way, then our mind goes a certain way. And then the question is, how do we uncondition that and allow ourselves to put our mind where we want it? And these are the powerful tools of yoga and meditation. It gives us opportunity to take away from the conditioning, to let ourselves back up from the cycle of thought or the fluctuating mind that can take us, you know, from here to there all the time.
How do they do that? Talk to us more about those tools. How do meditation and yoga uncondition the mind?
Oh, yeah. Well, meditation can, first of all, activate the opiate receptors in the brain. So you allow yourself to sit down a few minutes a day. You're able to follow your breathing. There's many different styles. And one of them is mindfulness meditation or concentration meditation, so you can follow your breath or the texture of your breath and take a moment to take a few minutes to just re-engage the fullness of being, the beauty of being in this moment. And sometimes yogis will do mantras or repeat certain affirmations over and over to allow their mind to absorb the beauty of something instead of absorbing the negativity in something. Over a period of time, you get the power of concentration, which neuroscience says is the key to the neuroplasticity of the brain, is the ability to direct our attention. And yoga gives us that ability. Like if we're doing a yoga session physically, first of all, it's relieving all the tension in your body, which regular exercise won't do to the same length, because it will raise your testosterone but not drop your stress hormones, where yoga will raise your testosterone and it will drop your stress hormones. And you get this wonderful sense of relaxation, and it activates the creative hemispheres of the brain. And then that can be a great place to be as you continue to do that on a daily basis, and which is self-care. That's what it comes down to. And you don't just have to do yoga. Bottom line is, you can go drive a Harley Davidson and find peace in that. That could be your meditation. I know somebody that says they go on their Harley for like 60 miles into the mountains, and that's where they feel like they meditate and they find their freedom again and their peace. So whatever works for you that's healthy, you know. How do we find our place of being today in a healthy way, not in a negative way, such?
That's really lovely. Thank you. Now, I ask you about habits, because I know that, we come to this earth, and like you've been saying, we develop a self-image that leads us to have certain attitudes about ourselves, and then we get into habits of doing that, and once we're in a habit where you're not even aware that we're doing it. I was recently talking about with someone about being depressed earlier in my life, and my learning is that depression is a form of anger that you turn inward on yourself. And I was not aware of the depression, and I was very much not aware that I was an angry person. I was just in the habit of being angry. Talk to us a little bit about habits.
Yes, that's a great question. There's a quote that comes to me. I just want to back up for a second, and I'll come forward. I wanted to say a quote from Patanjali, and I forgot. He's the ancient yoga sage, and I think it'll lead into what we're going to talk about next. He says, overcome improper thoughts and emotions by pondering on the opposites. And when one is in nonviolence, hostility ceases. And when one is in contentment, a supreme happiness is attained. And I think that has a lot to do with how we are shifting our attention and where we're putting our mind, especially if self-worth comes into play. So if I feel like, and that might have been something you learned from childhood. I mean, there's a lot more work there to talk about, and, you know, regarding the past. And I relate to that, and I'm sure a lot of people do, in regards to depression and how their mind, if we put our mind on negative thoughts and we start devaluing ourselves or using our creativity to hurt ourselves. So we're using our creativity, we're using our ability to create our reality to hurt ourselves. So I can spend the day today thinking of whatever I would consider a lack and meditating on that lack all day long. And it could be ridiculous things, you know. Let's say I'm an athlete and I want to reach a certain speed in my running. I'm an Olympian and I want to reach a certain speed. If I keep on focusing on the inability to reach the speed, at some point I'm going to get angry and upset and depressed at myself, and I might even do depressive or negative actions to hurt myself one way or another, besides allowing myself to get into that state. In itself, that's a form of self-hurt, right? And
yes.
If the athlete decides instead to choose to look at what roads they need to take to improve their performance, who can help them take those roads, and contacting those people and say, hey, I need help, I need a coach, or I need somebody to come here and show me the way, and then they can also start doing visualization so they can, on a daily basis, envision themselves reaching those roads, which is what a lot of Olympic athletes do now. They're using the art of visualization, well documented, and using that technique of visualization to see yourself where you want to be. So taking 10 minutes a day to visualize yourself in the event, or let's say you're the athlete, seeing yourself reaching that goal and allowing the inspiration to come through, because then the mind will send you messages, or the brain will send you signals of how to reach it. And if you're open and you're listening and you're not in that state of negativity and shutting down where you can't hear anything, even if somebody comes up to you and they go, hey, you're in a bad state, get out of it, or whatever somebody would say, you won't hear it because you're in a bad state, right? So just for practical purposes, it's healthier to keep yourself in a place of peace, in a place of appreciation and content, in a place of, I want to say relaxation or letting go, like allowing the beauty of life to unfold and manifest around us, trusting, having faith in creation that we're taking care of, to look at the abundance of life and to put your mind on something positive, like Patanjali says, Pratipaksha Bhavanam, it's called in Sanskrit, putting your mind on opposite thoughts. That way, which is very difficult for people in the transition period, very challenging to get your mind to going to the opposite thought. It's like you're going to the gym for the first time and you've never been there before. And people go to the physical gym, but I like to inspire people to go to the mental and spiritual gym on a daily basis and to work the brain. Yeah, mm-hmm. Pump up the brain like it's a muscle. Pump mm-hmm. up the positive thoughts like they are a muscle, because they are. You wire them up. You fire the neurons, they wire together.
You
so
know
allowing
the,
your mind... Yeah?
The tagline for this show is to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become, which is, to my mind, what you're talking about there, that the way to transition, really, like I've been a psychotherapist for 40 years. People come into my office. Let's say a couple comes into my office wanting some help, and what they usually start doing is telling me what has happened in their history. And why what he did or she did didn't work for them and what they're upset about. And I listen for a few minutes and then I say to them, you know, I'm glad you're telling me all of this, but let me tell you something. I've never, in all my years of working with people, found two people that will agree on what actually happened in the past. So we can talk about the past if you want. But I'm going to suggest that that's wasting your time and money and my time, because the only time you have power is in the present anyway. So let's talk about where you want to go, not where you've been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And there's so many different approaches, and I know what you mean. There's also that idea of what's cooking that's making them still in these conditioned behavior. Like, why are they wanting to stay in the negative? We're like very addictive as human beings to, or habitual. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we also can be emotionally addicted, and we have these kind of go-to responses that usually started off in childhood, and that's why it's important for people to do inner child work. I'm a big fan of inner child work, because the deficits from childhood that weren't met become character defects, in a sense, or vices. We're in this constant reaction to the past, and our behavior to that past no longer serves us. So I think a lot of times people have to heal that past and re-champion that inner child and allow themselves to do the work to get out of the cycles that they've been addicted to for years and decades.
I know you've mentioned that you're interested in John Bradshaw's inner child work. Can you give us a brief description of what that approach is?
Yes, and I'm holding a workshop in Los Angeles in December, January, loosely based on the material. It will be an inner child workshop, healing the inner child workshop. But
how do people find out about that workshop?
I'll have it up on the website, divineyogala.com is my website, divineyogala, as in Los Angeles, .com. And I'll thank you, Eileen. I'll have it up there probably in the next 2 weeks. I'm finalizing a booking space. And it will be a 6-week workshop on healing the inner child and giving exercises. So what was the question? I'm sorry, I forgot.
What's unique, or what's the basic foundation of John Bradshaw's inner child work? Give us a kind of a overview, if you will.
I think essentially it's championing becoming the parent to your own inner child. So you stop blaming your parents, you stop blaming people around you, your caretakers, or the orphanage you might have grown up in. At some point, you got to heal what occurred. And you got to process it emotionally. A lot of times people stuff their emotions. They don't want to look at the past. And then it keeps on popping up because there's unfinished business. And that creates our defects or our vices. is the unfinished business, the inability to process emotions. And Virginia said, Pierce said something really beautiful to that effect, which was, or I think feelings are not facts, and that we can unlearn what we've learned, and that our emotions, if we don't process them, they'll lead to neurosis. And Jung had said that as well. If we're not grieving the past, allowing ourselves to sort of grieve the stages of childhood that were not developed, and allowing ourselves to go back as adults now and to champion that child and to become our own best friend, in a sense, our own parent, that ability can release the spirit, release the mind, and through the hypnosis work, because there's a lot of hypnosis work involved, and a lot of behavioral work, where you take different actions every day to get in touch with yourself, get in touch with the child within you, and different forms of championing. So I think essentially it's rescuing that child that might still be living in that house of trauma, especially for people who've been sexually molested or physically abused, or mentally abused, which there's a lot of variance in that for many people. Even just the verbal abuse, people were not taught how to parent correctly. And that's why it's important for parents today to go to parenting classes, to go to a therapist like yourself to work on how do I reparent myself to be a better parent even.
But let me tell you, there's so many wonderful tools. Yes, that's really great. Thanks for that recommendation. Well, let me tell you a little twist to this that I've been working with recently. I had most of those issues that you just listed off of you know, what happens in your childhood. And so I did work on it as a therapist and in my own therapy work, but I also used it to help people say, okay, I came from here, and I'm over here now, and this is how I got there. And so the experience that my children had was that I talked about the pain of my childhood a lot. And I recently came to the understanding that it's time to rewrite the story, that you can also get to a point where you don't have to even have that story as part of your reality anymore. And I don't know if people are going that far.
That's a great point. That's part of the inner child work, is how do you rewire that history so even in your brain, physically, it's not there. Or it's there, but it's not owning you. You've healed it because you've recreated a past. Like, you are now your parent. You do the hypnosis work and you go back into the past as this current adult and transform the love with that child. You literally transform the event, in a sense. I think it's Bradshaw took a lot from, or took somewhat from, neuro-linguistic programming. And so using that hypnosis work to reprogram the history of the past, right? So where my attention goes, my mind will follow. So I can see a past that no longer exists, and maybe I've been repeating the same story for years that hurts me every time I say it, or whatever comes up is negative. And the ability to go back in this inner child work and then reprogram that and literally recreate a past that's beautiful so that you have something to have a base and you're not going back. You know, you can't talk about the same, you know, excuse my language, crap forever. At some point, you got to move on. You know, you got to process and say, okay.
Oh, no, you can do it forever.
Well, you can, but then you're ruining your present moment, like you said.
That's true.
Eileen, you're ruining your present moment.
That's true.
And that energy can weigh you down in life. So I think it's very powerful. I think it's really potent to do inner child work to heal the past. And also, I wanted to come back for a moment to this idea of what you were saying earlier with the clients, and coming back to the idea that where we put our mind will be. There's the law of attraction, and that's part of creating reality. It's the Seth, Elias, Abraham material, or Bashar, it's that channeled material. But I take what I like and I leave the rest. And I love how, I think it was Seth and said, you get what you concentrate upon.
Yes.
Which even Buddha has a quote like that, or even Jesus has his own version of a quote like that. Seek and ye shall find. Where we put our mind, we're going to be. So essentially, that's the art of creating reality. If I put my mind to negative,
I got to take a break here, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You keep mentioning hypnosis, and I know you have a hypnosis CD, so what I'd like to do is take a break and have you come back and finish that thought and tell us about your hypnosis CD. Can you do that?
Oh, yeah, thanks so much, Eileen.
Great, all right. So we're talking with yoga and meditation teacher and conscious creation life coach David Ibrahim about a practical approach to conscious manifestation. You're listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives, as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. All right, we're back here on Full Power Living talking with David Ibrahim, who is a yoga and meditation teacher and conscious creation life coach. And David, you have been talking about the role of hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming and so forth, and I'm aware that you have a new CD. So tell us about what the role of hypnosis actually is, whether you're talking about self-hypnosis or somebody else hypnotizing you, or are you talking about us hypnotizing ourselves all the time in the way we live our lives? I'm not clear what you're talking about there.
All the above.
Oh, no wonder.
Yeah, like if I wake up in the morning, right, before I go to sleep at night, I think Wayne Dyer, I heard him share a nice story about how people go to sleep, before they sleep, they turn on the TV and they watch violence in the news or violence on shows or these ideas that perpetuate a negative reality that can be real or don't have to be real. It's where you put your mind and where you'll be. So if I go to sleep and I sleep watching something negative and our brain processes that information for hours throughout our sleep, some of the most potent information is just before you sleep, what are you putting into your mind? Not just your body, but your mind also. So I think a lot of it has to do in terms of hypnosis is, do I put on something healthy to listen to before I sleep or even during the daytime to listen to plant seeds of healthy ideas? I think that's the power of hypnosis, essentially, is to plant these ideas that can, if we hear it every day for several weeks or several months, neuroscience says our brain starts transforming. And we start seeing life differently. You know, when we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. It says in the Tao, Wayne Dyer quotes that from the Tao. And I love that a lot. When we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. So if I'm conditioned a certain way and I've been hypnotized to see life a certain way and it's negative and it doesn't help me live vitally and from my authentic self, a beautiful life, then how do I recondition that? And I think one of the simplest ways is either reading spiritual literature on a daily basis, which a lot of people don't have time for. So a lot of times I keep on hearing that, oh, I don't like reading, or I don't have time to do that. And instead they'll jump on Facebook or, you know, look at gossip or something else that will spin them out, you know, politics, something to make them crazy, because they're addicted to that craziness, that anger or that upset feeling. So to break the cycle, at some point you got to say, you know what, I'm going to start doing meditation, or I'm going to start listening to hypnosis CDs. There's a lot out there, and mine is specializes in affirmations, and it's to be played every day for a few weeks to allow the mind to start hearing positive ideas, healthy ideas, to start getting seeds that I can transform into wonderful fruit trees, in a sense, I can live from, just by changing my perception. The hypnosis CDs allow people to change their perception. That's the power of meditation and yoga, is we're changing our perception, like we were talking about before, I mean. Mm-hmm. We don't have to go to that negative past. We don't have to go to the negative history or negative thinking. We could change our perception. But a lot of people aren't able to do that on their own, and they don't, they're not even have the money to do it with a therapist. Or so that's where 12-step programs are great. There's so many out there. So at least they can go to something to change the cycle of behavior and thinking so that they can change their life. Because if you don't change that cycle, you're not going to change your life. You have to change the thinking and the behavior. You have to change your perception and your actions. It's the only way to change your life. So one
Thank
of the simplest
you.
Ways, I believe, is through hypnosis CDs, to start putting on these healthy ideas and to let your mind rewire, your brain rewire through hypnosis. And I wanted to share an example, too. I'm not going to share my own, because I can say that hypnosis CDs have transformed my life, and I've been using them probably since I was in my early 20s. Shakti Gowan, late teens. Shakti Gowan was the first one I think I used. Or Linda Dahl was another one I really loved. And that was many years ago, and it helped me go through magical times, in a sense. I've experienced some truly astounding events in my life that most people would wish to have in terms of love, in terms of financial success, in terms of internal success. But it came with a lot of work, and that's what Virginia Satir was saying, that you, it's something you have to work towards. I'm sure she became an amazing woman, an amazing human being because of all the work she'd done. And the story I wanted to share was, I've been working with somebody on inner child work and using the hypnosis CDs from the Bradshaw modality. And when I first met the person, they were suicidal. It was about a year ago, a little less than a year ago. And they were suicidal, and they saw life as something that they really didn't want to partake in anymore. They didn't want to be part of it. And my initial response was happy. You know, I thought, great, you came to the right person. Like, we'll work through that very simply if you just follow, you know, the path I'll lay out for you, as my mentor did for me, and I'm grateful for my mentor, Bob, for having guided me, and my yoga teacher, Gil Elliott, has taught me so much, too. So I want to thank him real quick. But coming back to the story, so we started doing the inner child work and processing all the damage that the person had been through, sexual abuse, years of physical abuse in their childhood. And this person now is a completely different person by doing the hypnosis work, healing. There's that saying, you can't heal what you don't feel. So initially you want to process it, but you don't want to keep living in the feeling. At some point you don't have it anymore because you've healed it. But watching this person grow over the year has been truly extraordinary. And then seeing them become this wonderful person, going out into life again, loving life, taking care of themselves, exercising when they can, something that they never wanted to do before, and changing all their thinking and their conditioning. And that comes from the hypnosis work and the daily showing up. You know, that person showed up for themselves at the spiritual gym, at the mental gym, on a daily basis. And
that's
sometimes
great.
They can't. You know, sometimes they call up and they say, you know, I really can't do anything today, I just want to rest. And that's perfectly understandable. You know, there's sometimes you need to rest and enjoy the sailing, and sometimes you need to, you know, get into the helm and turn the wheel and put up, roll up the sails because the wind is blowing and you need to get your act together, you know.
Right. I've got a couple of questions here for you from our chat. Are you open for that?
Yeah, I would love it.
Okay. Given David's experience in banking, can he speak about how to more consciously create our lives with respect to money or lack thereof?
Yeah, and I'll show some key exercises I did while I was a banker, and I became a very successful banker within a short amount of time, and how hard I worked to get there. First of all, I started doing visualization. So on a daily basis, I saw the reality I wanted to experience. I didn't let my mind go to what, when I first got there, somebody, a long timer that was there for like 30 years, I call them big birds. A big bird was training me and said, you're never going to make it here. You were a pizza man and you were somebody from the neighborhood. You're not going to make it here. And you have no college education. That's what the person told me. And I said, I actually have the greatest education I could ever have. I've been working for 20 years. I'm lucky. I started at a young age. And I learned sales and service are the key to success in business. Customer service and sales. So if you have that, you can go into any industry and become successful. And what happens is people don't have good customer service skills. They don't see the necessity to be a good host It's like you're having somebody come into your house when they come into your business. And I believed when I was managing the banking centers that I owned the banking center. It was my business. It was my store. I had an entrepreneurial ownership. You know, when I looked at it, I saw it as my center to love and take care of. It wasn't just a job. I was there to help people. So changing your perception can change your financing. And how you approach people, too. Like, how am I helping them? Maybe, like, I had a person that was a car washer. And I didn't realize that they were also a homeowner. And that they wanted to create their own business. And when I looked at the person, they didn't look like a homeowner. They looked more like a person that was very on a low level financially. It was my judgment. And it happened right when I got to a certain banking center. So that helped me understand that I can't judge a book by its cover. And that I can explore and ask people questions and see where they're at. And then help them out. And then that person ended up buying a building and while the real estate was still low.
Okay,
they do really well for themselves.
So you visualize, and then you change your perception, and then what?
Okay, and then, that's the first part. Then the second part would be, what I did was I started looking at the people that were top performers, and I would call them up and ask them, what are you doing? So I took on mentorship. I said, how did you get into your position? What specific things are you doing every day that I can basically implement and take from you and work on a daily basis? So after I found several different strategies that were components to that company, I started utilizing them on a daily basis. So I started finding out that if I, let's say, printed up the screens of every client that came in, because we had a lot of clients that would come in, so if I printed up the screens with like over $5,000, I could call up the client or have my bankers call them up and then solicit the person for some kind of sale or service, see if they're doing okay, build a relationship with the person, get them to want to work with us at that center and keep us as their personal banker in a sense. And then when they're ready to do some kind of financing, we would be the person they would go to because we already established a healthy relationship.
Okay, so I want to keep us just a little bit closer to the question here. Because I think the person who's asking the question doesn't necessarily have the the bank behind them. That the question really is how individuals can more consciously create their lives with respect to money. So I want to move you just a little bit to say, take what you learned at the bank and apply it to an individual who's not necessarily at a bank. So,
well, a lot of that is self-worth. If you feel like you're worthless and you're not worth money or you have issues with money, that's probably the first place to go, what's my belief system? And what belief system do I have about money? I used to have a belief system at a time, as I've been through having a lot of money and then having little money. I've been through different stages of that, and each time it's come down to my self-worth with money, or seeing myself or seeing money as something, I don't want money. That's for people that are greedy or selfish, and not realizing that money is a beautiful energy and that you can do a lot with that energy. It's not it's a currency, it's a form of physical energy. And to change your perception of the money will change your experience with it and will change how you receive it. So sometimes it's a simple shift in just the perception, just that one idea to say, wait, oh, money is beautiful to have money. It's like my heart doesn't tell the blood, I'm not worthy, don't give me more blood today. Or my body doesn't tell the heart, I'm not worthy of pumping. You know, we're created from immense abundance. This whole universe is immensely abundant. If anything, the creator or creation is immense, infinite abundance. So I think that when we open our mind to that loving idea that I am that great abundance, that I am abundance, and my body is abundant, and we start opening our heart to the beautiful abundance of life and to seeing the advantage of having financial success and the beauty of it and loving it, too, to say, I love being wealthy. I tell myself that all the time. I used to say, no, I don't want wealth. That's for crazy people, or those are for people that are materialistic. Well, anything I do is materialistic. It's a silly idea. It's immature, actually. You know, I'm walking. I'm in the material body, so I'm materialistic then. I mean, it's
right.
Just a mindset.
Okay.
So when we change our mindset, our life changes. And I think one of the key components is to say, what's my view of money and my self-worth with it? How do I view money?
Good. Thank you for that. I want to get to the other question. Does David teach his children to do yoga, and how does he teach his own children about conscious creation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I recently got to teach a class with autistic children, and there's a lot of studies that show how yoga helps them deal with stress and becoming overwhelmed with sensory overload, which is mm-hmm. a part of the autistic spectrum. So they find that yoga is playful and helps them breathe and allows them to feel the present moment. And I think I don't teach children yoga per se, yeah, and I don't force it on my daughter. I try not to proselytize about anything. I just work on myself and allow that example and my ability to authenticate or actualize my own beautiful essence as a spirit, as a soul, as a being. I let that influence my daughter. So I give her love and attention. I listen to her when she talks. I allow her to communicate as much as she wants. And I do my best to be empathetic with my child and communicative and open to what she has to share. She's only 4 years old, but she's a wonderful spirit, you know, and I try not to shut down her own spirit, and I try to ask a lot of questions, and I try to talk as little as possible so she can talk, and then I reward her with sort of affirmations in a sense. Like I'll tell her, every day I tell her, you are an amazing soul, and I tell her that all the time. I say, I love you. I call her Bubba. So I say, I love you, Bubba. You're an amazing soul. You're the most beautiful person I've ever met. You're a genius. So I tell her every day, I have different ways of saying things. And I think it's really important to encourage that beauty within them and to allow them to develop their self-worth. It's being cultivated through our eyes. How we mm-hmm. see our kid. If I push my kid away all the time, then they're going to get self-worth issues. If I'm always pushing my kid away or saying, I'm busy right now, leave me alone. You know, mm-hmm. if we shut down the kid, because the kids are so vital. Like, they are pure source energy. They're jumping bunnies, you know, and people want to give them medication or say that they're attention deficit or they have problems, when what they're really doing is shutting down. It's a parent who cannot handle the beauty of the child because the parent is so dysfunctional. And so they want to dope them up. I mean, maybe there's some minute situations where medication should be used. I don't know.
Most people who've been on this show recently are not in favor of medicating kids at all. So
I find that it's dysfunctional parents that don't want to deal with the energy of the child, so they find medication to shut them up, which is really sick and disgusting.
What was amazing to me, I told you about my granddaughter having some difficulty at school, and I went and spent just an afternoon at the school, but I visited three different classrooms from kindergarten through second grade. And what was amazing to me was about three-quarters of the time, the teachers were working to be in control of the children. You know, sit this way, turn that way, is this how we do that, only talk. In fact, one child was called down for laughing too long. And now, this is a private school.
I would take my kid out of that school if I said that.
Well, the kids are leaving that school, yes. But, I mean, it has many wonderful qualities. My impression has been that a lot of times public schools, because the teachers are more overwhelmed there with numbers, tend to do that more. But it just seems like it's becoming the norm in education that children are supposed to sit down, shut up, and take in what's being offered to them, which denies this very part that you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of seek and ye shall find. And I like to say, to the extent you seek is to the extent you will find. So if I have a child and I find the school's not good, then I should do my best to try and move them around. If I can't, then I should give them myself when they're not in school, at least as good as a adequacy that they count,
yeah.
I think is how
yeah.
Virginia Satir called it. And I think that's what's crucial in this work, is making the kid count. Even if they're at a school that's, you know, some people have no choice at all. They're powerless. Like, that's their situation. They got accepted. So the best thing they can do is become a healthy school at home.
Right.
And how do they raise that kid with adequacy and allowing them to count and loving the child and being there, embracing their child, not watching TV and ignoring the kid or saying, oh, I'm doing something right now, leave me alone. Or instead, getting down on their feet at the kid's level and talking eye to eye and being there, loving and curious about what that kid has to offer. And that's where the deficit levels can happen. And that's where a lot of people have lost their child, the healthy child within them, is because mm-hmm. those stages were not met. A lot of people come from dysfunctional families that were busy. They were making a lot of money. That's what I see all the time. family's making money, parents are making money, they don't have time for the kid, you take care of my kid. You know, I got to make millions of dollars and retire a miserable person one day. So I think that, you know what I mean? People don't even see what kind of cycle they're in. It's craziness. And I think that's the transition. Trauma starts happening. It's like consciousness is forcing us to look at our reality as conscious creators. We're being squeezed through trauma, traumatic events, people getting sick. They're starting to realize, oh, I've got this physical disease. Life is not just working a job I hate and making money that I don't need that much. You know, life has something more to do than that, and I can explore now, but it took me this drama. I think Anthony DeMello says, when we're sick of suffering, we'll cease to suffer. Or maybe he got that from Buddha. But there's this idea that we end up having some kind of traumatic event to wake us up, which we don't need that. You know, we can have enough traumas. I think the universe is very generous. We can have enough traumas to set a standard that we don't have to have any more, and to say, no, I'll choose a peaceful and a joyful life. From here forward, I learned the hard way I don't want that anymore.
I'll change my diet. That's a wonderful place to end our show. I'm sorry, but we have to end right now. that's really great. I've had enough of those, and I agree with you. That's where I have trouble with people saying we have to suffer all the time. No, we don't. If you step into life and embrace the learning, you don't have to suffer. David, thank you for being our guest here on Full Power Living. I want to remind people that your CD is at your hypnosis CD is at cdbaby.com/CD/David Ibrahim. It's Ibrahim 2. That's also on the chat. And your website. What? Yeah, and divineyogala.com is your website, right?
And if they go to the homepage of Divine Yoga, they'll find the link right on the right side of the page.
The link is on there, too. Good. Yeah, forgot about that. All right. Well, thank you for talking with us about conscious creation and parenting and inner child work and the richness of what we talked about today. Thank you for being with us on Full Power Living.
Oh, thank you, Eileen. It's been a blessing. Thanks so much.
Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. In the meantime, sign up to listen to our archives at emotionalpro.com and listen next week for Paul Hulich as he relates his powerful discoveries about how to kick mental illness with 9 natural habits. We look forward to having you with us. Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, thank you for being our producer today and keeping us on track. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.